From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Pete Buttigieg, as you are hearing in the newscast, will be in Sacramento Friday. Bernie Sanders is starting a three-day tour of California colleges Monday. Vice President Mike Pence, again, it has been noteworthy that he will campaign for President Trump in Reno next week. You can certainly tell that the presidential race will be moving west. But first of all, there's New Hampshire tomorrow. David Siders is in New Hampshire, joining us by cell phone. Hello, David.
Hi, good to be here.
So I guess you're in the midst of snow. Where exactly are you and what's happening around you?
See, we're driving from Keene to Nashua, where Amy Klobuchar is having some events today. She's one of the, I think, the candidates that people are watching because she's a candidate who could make a move. If she finished well, I think, tomorrow, she could cement herself as a legitimate contender in this race. And I think if she doesn't, signs will point the other way.
So, David, you're Politico's national political correspondent. A lot of folks here in Sacramento know you from your senior writer role at the Sacramento Bee. But you filed a story today saying that there is a realization setting in that nothing that happens in New Hampshire is really going to resolve what's underlying in the Democratic Party. Would you expand on that?
Yeah, I think what's going on here is that most years you have some culling of a large primary field in Iowa and New Hampshire, but clearly that didn't happen in Iowa, and I don't think there's any reason to expect it will happen tomorrow in New Hampshire. Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden will still go on, even if Biden has a very poor day. He still has South Carolina and Nevada to look ahead to, where he has stronger support with people of color. Pete Buttigieg is almost the inverse case, where he's doing well in Iowa and New Hampshire, but has no demonstrated support with people of color. And then you have, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Michael Bloomberg's waiting in the wings. So I think this looks like a race that stands to be muddled at least through Super Tuesday.
I'm going to jump ahead here a moment to Tom Steyer because of what you just said, who apparently is polling strong in South Carolina, which is another interesting factor. To refer back to your article, some people said to you, this race is just all over the map, or mumbo jumbo, as one person said.
Yeah, Steyer's an interesting case. I think how he's polling in South Carolina is a huge surprise. And it could be one of two things. It could be that he's strong there, and we'll see when Biden shows up and Buttigieg, if he's still doing well after Nevada. The other possibility is that Steyer has invested a lot of money in South Carolina and time, and so he's almost had the landscape to himself. It's unclear how he'll do there, in part for the same reason it's unclear how Joe Biden will do there. I guess the question is, how much of a momentum state is South Carolina, and how much of it is baked in? So here in New Hampshire and then in Nevada greatly influence South Carolina, or are they people whose loyalties stay? And then that obviously advantages somebody like Biden and I suppose somebody like Steyer.
So you're alluding to one of the questions that I ask, which is California voters who have until March 3rd to cast their ballot, have their ballot on their kitchen counter or in their car, whatever, the mail-in ballot. How much do you think voters wait to see how the field narrows, where the momentum is, before casting that ballot?
It's a good question. I would imagine that Paul Mitchell or somebody there would have some good historical analysis of that. My guess is that more people will wait this time because they will understand that the field is so unsettled. I certainly wouldn't turn in a ballot today if I was voting in California. I'd be waiting to see what South Carolina looks like.
So the Iowa results are in. 14 delegates went to Pete Buttigieg, 12 to Bernie Sanders. Then the field went Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, one delegate to Amy Klobuchar. Are you hearing that Bernie Sanders is challenging those results? What's the news on the ground there?
That's right. Last night, his campaign manager said they would be calling for a partial recanvass of those ballots, and I believe, at least as of 30 minutes ago, the race was still too close for the Associated Press to call. That's just a mess that has really clouded over the entire week here, I think, in this primary.
How so? How do you know, or who's saying what about Iowa's impact there?
Well, I think that what happened in Iowa, first of all, created some tension between the candidates that might not otherwise have been there. You talk to Bernie Sanders supporters who believe that Buttigieg, by claiming victory early, essentially, you know, stole momentum that he might not otherwise have had in New Hampshire, and we do see him with some momentum here. On the other hand, Buttigieg, regardless of how he finished, did well in Iowa, and so maybe it does, you know, it can rightfully come by some of that momentum, but that's created some tension. When the state party chairman sits down to meet with reporters, the second or third question he's asked is, what are your recount procedures? And, you know, how many days should we extend hotel reservations beyond election day? So I think it's just created an air of tension that persists.
And a joke in the Oscar show last night, too, about counting the ballots for the winning Academy Awards. So it's now moved into popular culture. 33 delegates are at stake in New Hampshire. And the town of Dixville Notch is going to vote first. Do you know some of the backstory there?
Yes, this is, I think, a town that, weren't they at risk this year of not having enough residents?
Yeah. They only had four. They need five to vote. And so somebody that was just living just outside the city border moved in time to vote in the primary.
That's so interesting. Look, you know, the experience in Iowa, right? Everybody has these quaint experiences of a caucus. And I know New Hampshire is different. But there are quirks here, just like the Dixville Notch thing that you talk about. I do wonder how long that can be sustained. There is, you know, it's an enjoyable process, I think, for people to watch. And there's something likable and traditional about it. On the other hand, there is a whole swath of America that looks at these two heavily white states with very, you know, in Iowa's case anyway, this obscure kind of difficult to understand caucus system and say, what in the heck are we doing starting our presidential elections there? It comes up every 4 years, I guess, but I think after this it will be reexamined again.
I'm talking with Politico's national political correspondent, David Siders. He's joining us by cell phone from a snowy area of New Hampshire. On the road he is. If you're a California voter waiting to see what New Hampshire does, or a Nevada caucuser for that matter, you're going to have an answer tomorrow night, and NPR will have coverage of the night, which Cap Radio will carry live. Let's back up to Friday night and the New Hampshire debate. And I want you to hone in particular on Tom Steyer's debate performance. He's getting some interesting attention for a couple reasons.
Yeah, the exchange, well, first of all, he didn't stare directly at camera. He actually debated like a normal human being, which I think was roundly well received. He was at a Bloomberg News Forum yesterday, and I asked him if, you know, there was an advisor who had told him to do that, and he said, no, I just forgot. And so he's planning to go back to the straight-to-camera debating that he says speaks more like, you know, he's speaking to the American people. But I guess beyond the style, the substantive point with Tom was his challenge of Joe Biden to disavow remarks that a prominent South Carolina surrogate of his, Dick Harpootlian, made recently about a supporter of Tom's. And you know, Tom Steyer said that the remarks were racist. Dick Harpootlian has said that they weren't. There was a squabble on stage. I don't think it's consequential to the campaign unless Steyer puts money behind advertising in South Carolina on Biden and race. And if he does that, I think that could have some effect. Steyer certainly has the money to if he chooses to.
There's also conversation about Tom Steyer trying to buddy up to Bernie Sanders. Twitter took off about it. It seemed noticeable and unusual to people. It's caused a lot of conversation about kissing up to the billionaires in this Monday after the weekend. What's the talk there around that? I'm sure you know or have followed some of the social media on this.
Yeah, I think Steyer is genuinely a happy warrior and happy to be friendly with anybody on that stage. And ideologically, he rejects the idea of being cast as, you know, where you would normally put a businessman, which would be in the moderate lane. He sees himself as a progressive with an understanding of the economy, which I think is a tough place to be, but that's certainly, I think that explains where he sees himself there. I don't think he would be buddying up ideologically anyway, any more to a Joe Biden than a Bernie Sanders. Think about climate change and some of the policies he would support. I mean, heck, backing reparations, that's a pretty progressive place to be. So I think that's where that stems from.
Is this the first time you've been on the presidential campaign trail, David?
It certainly is like this. I'd worked there in Sacramento, and we'd see candidates come through and occasionally go to Reno, but I haven't been like this before.
So just in general, your impressions from Iowa and now to New Hampshire, and then you'll cross the country to Nevada for the, first of all, for a debate on the 19th in Las Vegas, and then the Nevada caucuses on the 22nd. How is it?
Oh, personally, it's fine. It's a good thing to be doing. I think for the candidates, it's unusual because there are so many of them, and it's so,
right,
it's still just so uncertain. And I think that, you know, when you contrast that with what's going on with the president recently, he's had a pretty good week. I think Democrats are a little bit apprehensive about the next few months here, and so some of the things you'd normally see in Iowa or New Hampshire, really excited mood around like Dixville Notch or the tables at the steakhouse in Iowa maybe would be a little more celebratory. I think there is at least an air of worry tucked in there.
So you quoted Amanda Renteria, who was the national political director of Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016, and she said, this week didn't feel good. There's no doubt about that. It didn't feel good from an our party standpoint. So some candidates are not there. Mike Bloomberg is about to fully engage in the process in a different way. What are the logistics here? Some will stay through tomorrow night, I imagine, but tell me about the movement of everybody.
Yeah, I think many candidates will immediately go to Nevada and California. There's a nexus there where you can do fundraising in California and campaign in Nevada at the same time. That's helpful to some of these candidates who need money. Bloomberg is still focused entirely on Super Tuesday, so you just see him bombarding the airwaves going forward. I think that's the logistics.
All right, David. Sounds like you're walking in crunchy snow, at least to my Minnesota ears. So,
well, at least the reporters around me are. We've made it to the destination.
All right. Thanks so much for the time in between. Appreciated checking
Thank
in with you,
you so
on the
much.
Road. All right. That is David
Take
Siders,
care.
Politico's national political correspondent. We'll post a link to his latest article, which he posted today. And NPR will have special coverage of the New Hampshire primary tomorrow night. You can hear it on CAP Radio starting at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Up next, Oak Park over the decades. Ginger Rutlin is staging her play When We Were Colored at the Guild Theater in Oak Park, and she reflects on her family's history there. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.